Greetings and welcome to Experiencing the Word, a Bible study ministry of Atonement Lutheran Church in Fargo, North Dakota. My name is Paul Cross, and I will be your guide through the Bible as we seek to understand God's plan for our lives and to learn life lessons from the pages of Scripture. In this season of study, we will focus our attention on Genesis, the first book of the Bible, the book of beginnings. If you would like to attend one of our studies, we meet at Atonement Lutheran, located at 4601 South University Drive here in Fargo. We meet on Wednesday nights at 6:30. But for now, join us in this recording of a live session of Experiencing the Word. All right, we shall start. Let's pray. Father in heaven, for Jesus' sake, thank you so much for tonight. As we gather around your word, open your word to our hearts and open our hearts to your word. May your word penetrate deeply into our lives, and may we learn from the lessons that you taught in the book of Genesis. Send forth your Holy Spirit here tonight, and we ask that you would direct and guide our conversation in Jesus' name. Amen. 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 Well, I see a number of new faces here. God bless you for being here. And but again, that's to make up for the absence of some familiar ones. But so we're just glad that you're here tonight. So welcome, welcome. We've been going through the book of Genesis. We're kind of going to do a little bit of, I don't want to say backtracking, because that's not exactly correct. But what I want to do, and what I've planned to do for some time, is talk about another individual in the story of Abraham. The Abraham narrative, the passages of Genesis that talk about the life of Abraham extend from Genesis chapter, towards the end of chapter 11 to chapter 25. But we're going to be looking at another individual, someone who doesn't get a lot of scrutiny. He gets a lot of scrutiny for one thing, but we want to look at all four things that written about in the scriptures, and that is Lot, L-O-T, Lot. Lot is Abraham's nephew, and Lot's famous for what? Sodom and Gomorrah, and what else? The salty wife, yes, absolutely. Well, I have kind of a salty wife, too, but that's it. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you there, Rhonda. Yes, I live dangerously. You know, why live if you can't live dangerously? That's what I say. Lot had, of course, a wife, but that's the same sort of episode. We're going to look at four lessons from the life of Lot. Four lessons from the life of, because there are four episodes, and again, they're not contiguous in the book of Genesis. Two of them are together, then another two of them are together. So that's what we're going to be looking at tonight. Most people are interested in the one on Sodom and Gomorrah, so we'll spend probably a little bit more time on that than we might on something else. But I do want to touch base with this because it is pretty interesting stuff, and again, it's another individual that we can learn some stuff from, actually some very important stuff from. As I mentioned, Lot is Abraham's nephew, and Lot is one who, let's turn in our Bibles to Genesis chapter 11. Genesis chapter 11. They're in the old note somewhere. They're somewhere in there. But Genesis chapter 11. It said, now these are the generations of Terah. Terah fathered Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Haran fathered Lot, okay? Haran died in the presence of his father Terah in the land of his kindred in Ur of the Chaldees. So not only did Lot follow Abraham into the land of Canaan, Lot started out all the way in Mesopotamia, in what would have been modern-day Iraq, sort of the Ur in the land of the Chaldees, just to kind of let you know, if you happen to have your Bible atlas with you, it's right down by the Persian Gulf, where the Tigris and Euphrates rivers meet, And so he had to come a long way to get where he's going. First of all, to Haran. Haran is probably where modern day, and again, using things that we might be able to relate to in contemporary news, Mosul. You know, you've heard of Mosul. It's in the north. It's sort of under a lot of persecution, let's just say. It's being currently occupied by ISIS. So that's about where Haran would be. That's kind of a long ways. And then they had to come back down through the area of Syria. So that's just to give you a little bit of geography. So he is his brother's, Lot is his brother, Abraham's brother's son. So that's how he's the nephew. His father has died, and so it's not unusual for Abraham to take this guy under his wing. Abraham has no kids yet, and so Abraham sort of takes him along for the ride. Uncles are going to prove to be an interesting commodity in the book of Genesis. Right now, we see one guy kind of acting as sort of the take the guy under the wing and show him the ropes. And that's kind of what uncles do. My uncle Lyle took me under his wing. My uncle Rudy took me. These are both brother-in-laws to my parents. Uncle Lyle taught me how to play whist. Any of y'all play whist? Yes, indeed. Don't play whist with me, because my Uncle Lyle got mad at me for playing like a... Because I beat him. Yeah, I know. That's worst terrible thing I could possibly do. But and then my Uncle Rudy, I guess he taught me to drink beer. If you call Rheingold and Falstaff beer, but he did. But it was he would always open a beer and say, first today. It didn't matter whether it was the fourth or fifth one he had in a row. It was just the first of that 24-hour period. Good Polish name, Staszynski. How about that? How's that? Rudolf, he was a member of the Polish Falcons. So, yeah, absolutely. Got that heritage going there. So, anyway, uncles do fun things like that with you. I mean, as I said, stuff that you know your parents aren't supposed to teach you how to do. Their parents aren't supposed to teach you how to, you know, play cards, to gamble. Your parents aren't supposed to teach you to drink beer and stuff like that. But uncles do stuff like that, you know. So that's why God gave us uncles, I suppose. Anyway, nevertheless, Abraham takes him under his wing, brings him along, and they do stuff together. And the stuff that they do together is this. Here's what they do together. They're entrepreneurs. They are in the animal husbandry business, I guess you could say, the sheep and goat business, and they do a lot of sheep and goat stuff, and you know what they do? They make a lot of money doing sheep and goats. I mean, Abraham's a rich guy, and we're going to find out that Lot's a rich guy too. These guys are both pretty wealthy folks, and they kind of specialize in making money. So that's an interesting thing that we will see later on. So that's kind of a background on that. As I said, the curious thing about Lot is that he appears in four distinct episodes in the narrative, then practically not again. He sort of just drops from the scene. He will be mentioned twice in the New Testament, both as a sort of a figure of the end times, that Lot is a representative. Jesus talks about Lot in Luke chapter 17, sort of as a warning of the end times, that, you know, as things were happening... Do you suppose that anybody was paying attention the day that the fire and brimstone fell on Sodom and Gomorrah? Probably not. Probably not. Nope, everything was, hey, you know, everything's fine, everything's cool, everything's all right. So, you know, I mean, people weren't paying much attention. Were people paying a lot of attention what happened when the flood started to come during the days of Noah? I don't think a lot of people were paying attention then, and that's Jesus even says that, kind of gives that indication that people were not paying a lot of attention at that time. So he kind of speaks to that issue. I don't know what you were doing when those folks flew the planes into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. We weren't expecting that. I mean, no one was expecting that. I got a phone call from my pastoral intern saying, are you watching the television? I was not, and then I turned it on and I saw what was going on. So that was kind of a curious thing there. What Jesus says is, as it was in the days of Noah, so it'll be the end. As it was in the days of Lot, it'll be the end. So he takes Noah and Lot and says, guess what? When the judgment comes, when the final day comes, guess what? It's going to be just like that. It's going to be very sudden. And so Lot even though he's not mentioned a lot, if you do that once, it's like the poinsettia joke. You like the poinsettia, don't you, Neil? You really do. You got to admit it's a great joke. So, but you and I are kind of, oh, geez. Thanks for the support there, man. Yes, indeed. So in any case, Jesus talks about Lot as a symbol of the end times. Then in 2 Peter, in 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 4 through 9, 2 Peter chapter 2, 4 through 9, again, Peter is sort of writing his last letter, and he says that, well, I'm sorry, Becky. Peter is also, says the same thing. He says, you know, there's going to come a time when the wheels are going to fall off society again, and things aren't going to go so well, and there'll be a judgment. It'll be like the days of Noah, and it'll be like the days of Lot. So again, Noah and Lot. And both of these two figures have the same thing in common, that there comes a point in time where God's judgment just can't wait any longer. God's judgment just can't wait any longer, and God must act in judgment. Now, this isn't a fun thing to talk about because, you know, being a Lutheran pastor, I talk a lot about grace and love and all these fun things that are lining up these new banners hanging. It's just kind of wonderful. We talk about that sort of stuff, and it's great to talk about to inspire people. But the fact of the matter is you can't ignore the fact that God is judge. You just can't do that. And sometimes we like to think that we can ignore the fact that God is judge, but God is judge. We want to appeal to God's mercy. I vote for appealing to God's mercy. Believe me, if you're praying for me, don't pray for God's justice for me, because if I got what I deserved, I would be in big trouble. Pray for God's mercy for me, please. Please, 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 please. So that was always helpful. Nevertheless, there is a point of judgment. So a lot of what we're going to be talking about tonight talks about judgment. So just, as I said, just with that in mind. Again, let's turn back to the Bible. Episode number one. Episode number one is about separation. About separation. Turn to Genesis chapter 13, verse 2. Remember what I told you? The chapters and verses are not inerrant, infallible, and inspired. They were added a lot of time afterwards and sometimes are goofy. Actually, this story does not begin with chapter 13, verse 1. That's actually a part of the last account. Now it begins with chapter 13, verse 2. Anybody feel like reading? Okay.
How far?
How far? You're new, right?
Yeah.
Guess what? You'll find out. All right, as I said, it's a dangerous thing, and I'm glad you're here. You're welcome to be here, and we're glad, but you read.
We'll stop you, Rob.
Oh, I will. Oh, yeah, you'll get stopped. Oh, yeah, okay. 13:2.
Abram had become very wealthy in livestock.
Now, what does it say there? It says that he was not just wealthy, he was very wealthy. One of the themes that I told you about before in the life of Abraham is the guy is rich. He's rich. Okay, read on.
Very wealthy in livestock and in silver and gold.
Oh my, diversified.
From the Negev, he went from place to place until he came to Bethel, to the place between Bethel and Ai, where his tent had been earlier and where he had first built an altar.
There he goes, building altars again. Okay, read on.
There Abram called on the name of the Lord.
Okay, now this is an interesting little thing. This is the proper name of God. Remember what I said? Anytime you see Lord in what's called small caps, that's his proper name. And the Jews never say God's proper name. And the reason why they say God's proper name is not because they think it's so holy that it can't be said, even though they do think that. They never say God's proper name is because if they never say God's proper name, you cannot be guilty of taking the Lord's name in vain. Make sense? Very rabbinic idea. As I said, if I don't do this, then I won't have to worry about this. So that way they can never worry about having to take God's name in vain. But that's interesting there because he calls on the name of the Lord there. Now, we saw from last week, even though last week took place much later, that he called upon, that God appeared to him as who? Remember El? El Shaddai. God appeared to him as El Shaddai, and we don't need to go through all that again, please and thank you. Nevertheless, hear a different name of God. Read on.
Now Lot, who was moving about with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents.
Okay, flocks, herds, and tents. That would be an indication that he learned something from Uncle Abe. Uncle Abe taught him something, a thing or two, about how to do what? Good businessman, absolutely. Be a good businessman and diversify. Again, diversification's a good thing when you're a businessman. Makes sense to do it that way. But also, you got a lot of this, you got a lot of this, and you got a lot of this. So Abe taught him some stuff, all right? So that's what's going on. Maybe he taught him too much. Read on.
But the land could not support them while they stayed together.
Aha!
For their possessions were so great that they were not able to stay together.
Their possessions were so great. Plural. Together. These people have got a going concern. They're doing very well for themselves. They can't do well together. So a couple things that are going to happen here now. So what we keep going.
And quarreling arose between Abram's herdsmen and the herdsmen of Lot, the Canaanites and Perizzites.
Okay, let's just stop here for a second. We're going to stop for a second. Okay, let's talk a little bit about some life lessons we can learn here, because there's some stuff we can learn for today. God is not against us prospering. God is not against us prospering. Sometimes you will hear people talking about God's preferential treatment of the poor, and God does love the poor. There's no two ways about it. There are all kinds of things that talk about how we should remember the poor, that we should take care of the poor, that it's our obligation as believers is to care for the lost, the last, the least, and the lonely. End of conversation. But does that not mean that we should be poor, per se? It doesn't mean that God blesses the elect. That's the whole Protestant work ethic. You know, the whole idea is that, even though we're a secular society, we believe in the Protestant work ethic, period. Because you can talk to the most rank atheist out there, and they will tell you, you know, you just get out there and work hard, you can make money. And that's because, and you're going to be blessed, even though atheists aren't supposed to use the word blessed. But be that as it may. They do sometimes. We have two people prospering. We have this relationship going on between Abraham and Lot. And again, as I said, it's a very familiar sort of deal. You kind of got like a family business going on. But what happens when family businesses do too well? So you quarrel, exactly. And this is... The sainted Mrs. Cross and I were having this discussion tonight about the now alleged to be $1.6 billion on the line. And I said again, I said, I finally figured out what I would do. You have to worry about it. Is that I would start and buy a brand new 3-car stock car team. That's about how much money I could. I mean, I'm just thinking about the most ridiculous way I could spend my money. But see, I'm not going to do it because we talked about this. It would ruin everything in our life. When you get that kind of money, all kinds of quarreling starts. I mean, it does ruin your life. You think I'm nuts. You say, well, try me. Well, guess what? There's a track record of it. I mean, over and over and over again. But when people prosper, and they don't prosper sort of, you get conflicting perspectives. You get very conflicting perspectives on how things should be run. And now here's the thing. Abraham, we heard previously, had a household of servants. We'll find out that he's got at least 318 guys that are able to go fight for him. Well, Lot does too. Lot's got guys too. And so what happens about guys? You know what guys do? Yeah? Yeah. Oh, yeah? Yeah. Oh, yeah? Yeah. Oh, yeah? Yeah. That's what guys do, right? That's what guys do because guys are stupid. Well, they are. I mean, haven't you been around guys? I mean, we do all kinds of stupid stuff. I mean, all manifest. Oh, I'm not lying. We do all kinds of stupid things in life. And the younger and more filled with testosterone we are, the stupider. There's a quotient. There's a graph that goes like this. Youth testosterone stupidity graph. You know, I mean, as I said, you can plot it. I mean, you can actually plot this stuff. I mean, really can't. Sorry. But, you know, as I said, you know, I don't know that age helps, you know. Of course, you know, what we don't read is this really began when one of Lot's herdsmen said to Abraham's herdsmen, "Hold my beer and watch this." So, that's in a different translation, I'm sure. Okay, somebody else want to read? Don't everybody volunteer at once. He left off at verse 8.
Then Abram said to Lot, "Let there be no strife between you and me, and between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself from me."
Okay, stop right here. You're going to see the word "separate" three times in this narrative. The idea is Abram's solution for things is that we need to separate. We've been doing this for a while, we've been doing this together, but there's come a time that we need to part company. And I think that's also true for sometimes for in relationships, that it's healthy to part company, sometimes in family relationships, sometimes in business relationships, sometimes even in spiritual relationships. There does come a point where the friction is so great that it's really the sensible thing to do is to separate. Okay? And that's what Lot is going to do. Okay, read on.
"Separate yourself from me. If you take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if you take the right hand, then I will go to the left.
If you get it wrong, you stop it before you get it."
And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw that the Jordan Valley was well watered.
Listen to this, well watered.
Like the garden of the Lord.
Like the garden of the Lord. Keep going.
Like the land of Egypt.
Like the land of Egypt. Three things there. One, two, three. Well watered, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt. He's looking out and says, "My, this place looks beautiful." Let me give you a little bit of a picture of what's going on here. They're standing probably in the Central Highlands, on the eastern side of the Central Highlands. Okay? This is where the land of Israel is very beige. Remember what I told you, that most pictures of Jesus, movies about Bible times are all very beige looking, very deserty and so forth. Well, Galilee's not that way. Galilee is actually green. But the problem is for Abram and Lot is they're already Canaanites and Perizzites living there. So they look out and say, what'll we do here? And so he looks down and says, "My, this looks wonderful." Now, he describes it three ways. Number one, well-watered. Again, if you've not been to Israel, you need to understand that the Galilee is heavily irrigated from Lake Galilee. Number two, the rest of the area is very dry and requires rain for it to grow, which is why we have the Canaanites acting the way the Canaanites do in terms of their fertility practices. Number three is that you have this very narrow strip of green that's water going from the Lake Galilee or the Sea of Tiberias or whatever name you want to give for it, down to the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea is the lowest place on earth, 1,400 feet below sea level. That's a lot. That's a lot. The reason for this, I won't go into geologically, but there is a fault line that goes right there. My brother used to tell me what that fault line is. It's my fault for not remembering. But nevertheless, there's a fault line that goes down through there, and that fault line has created both the Jordan River Valley, the Dead Sea, and one of those, I think, the Gulf of Aqaba down into the Red Sea. So all those things are on this fault line that separates Asia from Africa, okay? Now, he looks out and sees this and says, "Wow, that looks green down there." Not only that, but it also looks like the garden of God. This you might find fascinating, but after Adam and Eve are kicked out of the Garden of Eden, Eden's not mentioned a whole lot. I mean, people don't sit back and say, "You know, I tell you, if we could only go back to Eden, man, that'd be great." You know, some of us think that way, but it's mentioned very rarely. This is one of the rare places it's mentioned. I'm not saying it's not mentioned, it's just very rare. Particularly at the end, however, in the book of Revelation, you see this Eden-like place, or this new Eden, but it's not really a garden, it's a city. Kind of interesting. So he's described like that, so there is this sense of, gosh, if God made the garden, it must be incredibly beautiful. And then the next thing about it we see is that it is not only well-watered, but it's like Egypt. You will recall what I've said about how Egypt gets its agriculture. You don't need it to rain in Egypt, and it doesn't. It just doesn't. But you don't need it to, because you only have the longest river in the world going right through your backyard. You go probably 10, 15, 20 miles on either side of the Nile, you got beige. You got a lot of beige for miles and miles and miles of this. But right down the middle, you got green, because you have this river that goes 4,000 miles, and it waters everything there. So what he's saying is, we got a little mini Egypt here. Again, I've said this to you before. I want you to know this because it's important. Why Egypt is a critical place in the ancient world is this. It's a breadbasket. Just like why North Dakota is a critical place to the United States and the world, and the whole upper Midwest is critical, and why Port Cargill in Savage is such an important place, is because you see these huge grain elevators that are just absolutely massive, loading barges that go down the Mississippi, feeding the whole world. Well, the same was true about Egypt. You don't need it to rain there, so you can have incredible crops there. And also because the climate's not so horrible, you could probably have a couple crops per season, per year. So it's a breadbasket. So comparing it to this, Lot's thinking, hey, this is good. And the other crazy thing here is Abraham's giving him first pick. Okay, read on.
Like the land of Egypt in the direction of Zoar.
Yeah.
This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah.
Okay, now just a little, this is kind of a little hint, where the author is sort of reminding the reader. This is in parentheses. They didn't have parentheses in Hebrew, but this is kind of a parenthetic comment, and it's just sort of a, oh, by the way. But it also indicates that there's some fame associated with Sodom and Gomorrah, because the reader would say this is before that happened. That's a reference point. So if I'm reading this, it says, oh, I know about Sodom and Gomorrah, even though it hasn't been happened yet in the narrative, and we haven't gotten that far yet, but the person who's reading it is, of course, reading this well after these events happened, and so they'll know, aha, I know what's coming next, because there's a connection. Read on.
So Lot chose for himself all the Jordan Valley, and Lot journeyed east.
Okay, Lot picks the Jordan Valley, and he goes east. Best line ever in an Indiana Jones movie? He chose poorly. You know, when he chooses the Holy Grail, the wrong Holy Grail, and he dies a horrible death. Lot chooses poorly. And this is a lesson I think we can learn from. Just because something looks beautiful doesn't necessarily mean that this is the best choice for us. Lot makes a huge mistake here. Of course, Abraham makes a huge mistake here too. The mistake Abraham makes is this: is who's supposed to get the promised land? Abraham is supposed to get the promised land. He has been promised already at least twice, and will be promised again that he's supposed to get the whole land. Abraham consistently is jeopardizing the three promises: land, offspring, blessing. He's consistently putting these things in jeopardy, and this is the first time he puts. Well, no, this is the second time he puts the land in jeopardy. The first time he puts the land in jeopardy by leaving the land and going to Egypt. This is now the second time he's put the land in jeopardy. He says, you pick. You pick. Now, Lot puts himself in jeopardy by saying, this looks great. I'm going to go here. Not realizing that, you know, well, as I'm fond of saying about around, you know, living in the upper Midwest, when I came from Minnesota to Texas, they said, gosh, it's cold up there. I would remind them that the cold keeps out the riffraff and so forth, but nevertheless. But the riffraff are certainly going to hang around here, and this is what's going to be one of the problems. Read on, Keith.
Thus they separated from each other. Abram settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled among the cities of the valley and moved his tent as far as Sodom.
Okay. I
want to point something out here. He's currently living in a tent. The next time we will come across him, he'll have actually made a transition. And one of the big transitions that has happened in this part of the world is the transition between living a pastoral, agrarian lifestyle, where you're sort of nomadic and carrying, versus living an urban lifestyle. And these two things don't mix. These two things don't mix very well at all. And, you know, think about this. Even today, you know, small town kid coming in from rural North Dakota goes into the big city, and all sorts of bad things start happening to him. You know, he starts drinking Coca-Cola and chewing gum, and who knows what's going to happen next. Actually, to tell you the truth, back home where I grew up in the South, that was the big sin, is that you'd go to the big city and start drinking Coca-Cola. Of course, the fact of the matter is when that started happening is that was years and years ago when the coca in Coca-Cola stood for cocaine, and it actually was made with cocaine and cola nuts. So, but, I mean, that was a big thing. As I said, you know, you go to the big city, and this is what's going to happen to you. Well, Lot goes to pitch his tent near the big city, and before we know it, he's in the city. Okay? Now, Abraham has another little blessing time with God. Go ahead and read that on.
Okay. Now, the men of Sodom were wicked,
ooh,
great sinners against the Lord.
Absolutely.
The Lord said to Abraham,
they weren't lousy sinners. See, a lousy sinner doesn't know how to sin right, because they're lousy sinners. But a great sinner, and they know how to sin. These people have had practice. Okay.
The Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him, lift up your eyes.
Look around.
Look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward. For all the land that you see, I will give to you and to your offspring forever. I will make your offspring as the dust of the earth, so that if one can count the dust of the earth, your offspring also can be counted. Arise, walk through the length and the breadth of the land, for I will give it to you.
Wow. Okay, that's pretty wild. But again, here again is God sort of saying, Abraham, I love you, but you're kind of dense. I want to repeat this to you because this is now the second time that you have put this in jeopardy. I want to be clear with you. And so he gets really clear. He talks about, you know, look north, look south, look east, look west. So is there any other direction? Up and down, I guess. And then here's what else I want you to do. I want you to walk through it. I want to impress upon you that this is your land. This is going to be the land because guess what? You've been jeopardizing this. Don't be doing that anymore. God's kind of taking him aside and saying, let's get this clear. Let's get this straight. Okay? We clear on that? All right. Now, the next one. We're not going to read so much because we've already read part of this before. This is in chapter 14. But before we leave there, I want us to see a couple of the life lessons. First of all, one of the life lessons that we learn is that sometimes it's important to know when to terminate a relationship. Not all relationships are bad that get terminated. And again, I'm sure that this wasn't necessarily on a bad thing, but it was a healthy time for people to sort of separate these times out. As I said, they're healthy times to do that. It's kind of like with our kids. You have your kids around too long, and guess what happens? I told you the story about me graduating from high school, didn't I? I was 17, was going to be 18 in 12 days, and on my graduation from high school, from George C. Marshall High School in Falls Church, Virginia, my dad gave me two things. He gave me a watch, and he gave me a suitcase, and he said, Paul, it's time to go. True story. Then, when I turned 21, he gave me a matching suitcase, and you know one of those clothes bars you hook between the two hooks on the back of your car? You know, right there in the back seat there? He gave me a clothes bar and a matching suitcase, and he said, Paul, don't make me give you a roadmap. Now, the mothers out there are going, oh, that's so mean. Oh, yeah, the fathers are going, yes, go right on, Robbie. Absolutely, that's the way to do it. But there is a point where you need to say, it's time to separate. It's time to go on. But there's also a thing where you can see the spiritual lesson here is that these two people prospered each other. They helped each other. Obviously, it doesn't say in great detail, but it prospered these sort of things. And so you see that happening. That's another thing, is that we can help each other and these can have a healthy relationship. However, we also see a spiritual lesson here too, and that is this, is that all that glitters is not gold. All that glitters is not gold or necessarily green. All that's green is not gold. Because he sees this green sort of thing. He sees with the eyes of the flesh instead of the eyes of the spirit. He looks out at this because he's going to get in trouble two ways. He's going to, as we're going to see in the next two episodes, Lot's going to get in trouble from an external threat, and Lot's going to get in trouble from an internal threat by the choice that he made. And that's part of the thing that we see here, is that when we start making choices that aren't based on our spiritual discernment, we can get ourselves in a lot of trouble. If we simply make choices based on material discernment, we can get, not that material discernment is God. God gave us a brain. God says, and you've heard me say this before, don't check your brain at the door. But if we're not making decisions based on spiritual discernment, we can make some really bad, bad choices. Okay? Any questions about this lesson from Lot's life? This is number one. Number two is going to go really quick. Number two is the episode of rescue. The episode of rescue. The external threat are the kings of the east, and no, I will not make anybody read all their horrible names, because we had to do that in chapter 14. All of chapter 14 talks about the rescue of Lot. Now, Lot doesn't actually show up in this. We just know that Lot has been captured. A couple of things that are remarkable about this, we've already talked about with regard to the kings of the east coming and sort of taking over. We've talked about Melchizedek. We don't need to repeat Melchizedek to anyone. That's an important feature already. We spent a whole lesson on Melchizedek. But one of the craziest things about this passage that I don't have a really great explanation for, and that's this. Why would Abraham have an alliance with the king of Sodom? We already see that the king of Sodom is the king of a group of people who are great and wicked and famous sinners. But for some reason, Abraham has an alliance with them. I mean, I don't know all the details of why that is. It doesn't say, but Abraham somehow comes to the rescue of the king of Sodom. Now, not entirely. As these kings of the east come and conquer the kings of the valley and take captive these people, as is their habit to do, one of those people taken captive is Lot. Now, typically these people, if you were taken captive and not killed, basically your fate would be, you would be enslaved. That's just kind of how they did things in those days, that you would become a slave of the person who militarily captured you. So this word gets out to Abraham. And it's only when he hears that his nephew has been captured, that's when he comes to action. I don't think he cares all that much about the king of Sodom and all the other people that got in such a hurt bag there. As a matter of fact, probably worked to his favor because he doesn't have to necessarily deal with them. You know, there's some, well, let's face it. Let me kind of cut it. In reality, there's some unsavory characters in life with occasionally you will have to deal with. And sometimes being peaceable with them is a lot easier than necessarily being confronting them all the time. As I said, you don't necessarily have to be confrontational. Sometimes people think, you know, I just want to be confrontational because I'm an ornery cuss. When I was young, I used to be that way. Only problem with that was, you know what the problem with that was? At 6'1" and 127 pounds, I didn't have much to back it up. Do the math real quick, friends. You talk about skinny as a rail. I was skinny as a rail. That's when I graduated from high school. When I entered high school, I was 6'1" and 119. So again, do the math on that one. Yes. I used to have my draft card that said 6'1" and 127 pounds because people wouldn't believe me. I'm twice the man I used to be. Literally. No, actually, 119 twice is pretty much what I am right now. So be that as it may, you've got Abraham kind of scrapping, and the thing that's going undoubtedly, as I said, Lot's a minor figure in the episode. Again, this is the external threat that we run into. Okay, any questions about this? Because we talked about it a lot. It's not the most significant feature. Lot's really sort of just an also-ran. The big deal here is Melchizedek, and we already spent a whole lesson on Melchizedek and his significance. Okay? All right. Why you're here tonight. Genesis chapter 18, verse 16. Okay. Now, I want to talk to you about a feature of the Old Testament. And it's somewhat a feature of the New Testament, but it's more pronounced in the Old Testament. And this is what's called the law of biographical overlap. Biographical overlap. What happens is that you'll be in one story, and all of a sudden you're in another story. The storyline that we have before is we have these three visitors come to visit Abraham to tell him what? You're going to have a baby. Well, Sarah's going to have a baby. Yeah, Sarah's going to have a baby because he's already had a baby. I mean, he's, you know, Hagar and all that sort of stuff. You know, it's sort of the do-it-yourself deal. But he says, this time you're going to do it God's way, okay? And these three very mysterious visitors have this message that you're going to have a baby. Yeah. And they laugh. They think this is funny. And we talked about that. And then they get up from the meal. No, you don't need to go right now. Well, I said, well, we have some other business. And it's this other business that is kind of a bit of an issue, this other business. And so we're going to be looking at the other business now. And the other business is where Lot's third story enters in. Lot's third episode comes in. And perhaps, again, his most famous. So anybody feel like reading? New person feel like reading? Are we going to have... Okay, Meg. 16, chapter 18, verse 16. 16.
18, 16. Then the men set off from there, and they looked down toward Sodom. And Abraham went with them to set them on their way. The Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do, seeing that Abraham will surely know a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him? For I have chosen him, that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has promised him. Then the Lord said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great and their sin is very great, I will go down to see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry that has come to me, and if not, I will know.
Okay, we'll stop here for a second. Evidently, God's omniscience is broken and it's at the shop getting fixed. Because, well, yeah, think about this. Omniscience is, of course, God being all-knowing. And you say to yourself, well, if God's all-knowing, why does he need to send these three guys down there to find out what's going on down there? You say that. But more importantly, did you notice something else about that? Evidently, these guys are truly men because they need to have the way shown to them. They've lost directions. They don't have their MapQuest out. Or y'all use MapQuest or Google Maps? Which one are you? Google Maps. Okay, well, they don't have that. They're out there sort of, they need to be shown the way. So God must have his omniscience at the shop getting worked on at this time. For I don't know, I'm being silly right about that. But it is kind of interesting that what's going on. Yes, ma'am.
I have a question about 17. The Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do?
Yes.
Who's he saying that to?
Well, now see, this is the wonderful thing about this passage. Who is he saying that to? Now, as I mentioned before, this is beautifully depicted in the George C. Scott movie, The Bible, and they have Peter York, I think it's Peter York, three different faces of Peter York.
Yes, we can all hear you.
Okay, I was talking direct. I was only talking to her, though.
Have you heard a question? Would we like to hear it?
No. Okay, three faces, one person, same three faces in the movie. The idea is we don't know what's going on, but it sounds suspiciously like the Trinity. Could be. I mean, I'm not going to say that it's not. Sounds an awful lot like the Trinity, if you ask me. We have the same situation that we had in the garden. Well, you know, let us make man in our... Well, who's us? Okay, who's the us that we're making man in our image? Then we'll also have a little bit of confusion with the whatever it is that Jacob wrestles. You know, Jacob wrestles this... I mean, people often say he wrestles an angel. That's only because we teach Sunday school. You know, because it's too hard to tell a Sunday school kid, I'm not so sure that it's an angel. One place it says an angel, one place it says something else. What the heck's going on here? Just exactly what is it that Jacob's wrestling? I mean, is he actually wrestling God? Is Abraham actually entertaining God? Here's the even crazier thing about this. These three guys just basically say, where's your wife Sarah? And it's the fact that they happen to know her name seems rather unremarkable to Abraham. Now, what does that say? That he either knows who these three guys are, or he knows something else about who these three guys are, or what this visitation is about. Why else would these people know Abraham's wife's name? Evidently, God's omniscience really isn't in the shop being worked on. It's just God's just sort of messing with their heads, okay? Be that as it may. There you go. Who are they? Good question. Let's just say something to him. Robert.
If he's going to hide, could we assume he's in the physical form, and could this be an appearance of Jesus?
Well, let me put it to you like this. No, the hide from Abraham is this, is basically, what's going to happen in Sodom and Gomorrah is going to be very evident. Once it happens, there will be no hiding. It will be conspicuous. As a matter of fact, Abraham will see it from quite a distance off. I mean, whatever type of devastation that's going to take place there, it could be seen for scores of miles away. Okay? A long way away. So basically, it's a rhetorical question. Now, here's the crazy part. What does the covenant that God has given Abraham have to do with the judgment that God is about to unleash upon Sodom and Gomorrah? The covenant is about blessing, right? I mean, that's the theme of the book of Genesis. God is a God of blessing, and that God is going to use Abraham as an agent of blessing. What comes next is not about blessing. It's about judgment. And it is about the nature of God in judgment. And sometimes we don't like looking at that. We don't like understanding that. We tend to compartmentalize it. We tend to justify it. We tend to sort of stick the God of judgment into the Old Testament and say, there, you're going to stay in the Old Testament. We're not going to even bother to look for you in the New Testament. Well, don't look very hard in the Gospels, because you're going to find the God of judgment there. I mean, as I said, particularly, whatever you do, don't look in Matthew 25 if you think that way. Whatever you do, don't look that way, because it will ruin your image of Jesus. Again, Matthew 25 will ruin your image of Jesus. I'm sorry. You're all going to go home tonight and read Matthew 25, aren't you? I know. It's my plan entirely. Okay. That was Matthew 25. Okay. Don't read that. Don't. And whatever you do, don't read it before you go to bed. Anyway, so we've got that going on. Now, what's the relationship between these two things? The blessing which God covenant gives, the covenantal blessing that God gives to Abraham, and this judgment that he's about ready to unleash. So, let's keep reading on. Read on. Please read, sister.
So the men turned from there and went toward Sodom. But Abraham stood still before the Lord. Then Abraham drew near and said, will you indeed
stood still before who?
With the wicked?
Stood before who? The Lord. Where did he show up? Read on.
Suppose there are 50 righteous within the city. Will you then sweep away the place and not spare it for 50 righteous who are in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing, to put the righteous to death with the wicked, so that the righteous fare as the wicked? Far be that from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth do what is just? And the Lord said, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous in the city, I will spare the whole place for their sake. Abraham said, behold, I have undertaken to speak to the Lord. I, who am but dust and ashes. Suppose 5 of the 50 are lacking. Will you destroy the whole city for the lack of 5? And he said, I will not destroy it if I find 45 there. Again, he spoke to him and said, suppose 40 are found there. And he said, for the sake of 40, I will not do it. And he said, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak. Suppose 30 are found there. And he answered, I won't do it if I find 30 there. And he said, behold, I have undertaken to speak to the Lord. Suppose 25 are found there. And he answered, for the sake of 20, I will not destroy it. And then he said, oh, let not the Lord be angry. I will speak again, but this once. Suppose 10 are found there. And he answered, for the sake of 10, I will not destroy it. And the Lord went his way when he had finished speaking to Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place.
Okay, let's stop here. I neglected to do something on with regard to why would God be going down to look for himself. We're going to get to two life lessons back to back. First of all, with here, we have this situation of God sort of going back and forth with Abraham, and it seems like, well, a couple things here. First of all, you got to talk about some chutzpah, we'll call it that. You talk about chutzpah, that let me also warn you, don't try this at home. Don't try this on your own. Don't think, well, if Abraham can get by with it, I can get by with it. Don't do that.
And see how Abraham got very rich.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Yeah, good negotiator,
absolutely. He's an excellent negotiator. But the fact of the matter is this. Don't try this at home, because what might happen? God says, I'm tight with Abraham. I'm tight with Moses. You got to go talk to my son, okay? So we got to be careful about this. Moses does the same thing. Moses does it twice. What they both do, Moses does it in the incidents with regard to the plague in Numbers, for those of you who have been reading through the Bible all the way through, it just happened, right? Absolutely. And then prior to that, Exodus chapter 32. Both times, Moses appeals to the nature of God, saying, God, wait a minute, God, this is what you're like. And again, Abraham is appealing to the nature of God. He does it twice here. He says, number one, shall not the judge of all the earth do justice or have correct judgment? So what he's doing is he's reminding God of God's nature. That if you're going to judge justly, you have to judge justly. Now that takes a lot of nerve to say something like that. And the second thing he does is this, wait a minute. Just how far does your grace extend? And God says, you know what? Let's get down to the smallest common denominator. Yes?
Even in the book of Nehemiah kind of reminded God after he spoke to God about, after he was praying,
yes.
He kind of reminded God. He said that he told Moses,
right,
that if we do this,
yes,
he will do this.
Right.
So, he kind of reminded God, this is what you said.
Right. And you know, it's okay to say, God, this is what you said, if we're doing it in the right spirit. So that's one thing we can learn. Big life lessons here. We've got to do this in the right spirit. But the thing is that God is a just God, that we can't sit back and say, God has not been just in this case. He has been utterly just, even down to the smallest denominator. He has been just. But let's go back to the other principle. What's up with all this? Why is God doing this? Well, here's a couple things here I want us to consider. God is demonstrating, not that he needs to show this, because we've already seen that his omniscience is perfectly working well with regard to Sarah. He's trying to show Abraham something and show us something. That we should not take, just because we hear something, doesn't mean that we take it at face value. And you know, we're pretty bad at that in the church. Actually, we're very good at that in the church. It's something we shouldn't be good at, but we hear something and we think, oh, well, that must be true because so-and-so told me. Okay? The second thing about this is that godly wisdom dictates that we should examine serious charges firsthand. That if there's been a serious charge that's been leveled or serious charge or serious something, we should take a look at it. Now I'm going to tell you something incredibly frivolous. Get to know Snopes. You know what Snopes is? Get to know Snopes, particularly if you happen to be on Facebook. I'm not on Facebook. Quite proudly, I say that I'm not on Facebook. But I'm not. But anytime I hear some nonsense on Facebook, I will Snopes it. And immediately I will find out, Like this nonsense of you could get, if somebody wins this big lottery, everyone in America, if they could divide every person in America, we could eliminate poverty because there'd be, was it 4 million is what you? 3.3 million person to every person in America. America's really dumb when it comes to math. Do the math. 1.3 divided by 300 million comes out to $4.60. No wonder we're such bad business people. No wonder we're so, because we're just dumb when it, I mean, even I, you know how bad I am at mathematics. But arithmetic I can do. I can add, I can subtract, I can multiply, and I can divide. But check stuff out. And this is what we don't do. We don't look to the word. We don't look to the truth. We don't get to the truth of the matter. And we cause problems that way. And God is showing Abraham and God is showing us a life lesson that these are some of the things that we need to be doing spiritually. Number three here. Likewise, such godly wisdom asks whether actions are warranted, warrant the scuttlebutt. In this case, they certainly did. I mean, there is a lot of scuttlebutt going on here. You know, where there is smoke, there is fire, typically. And so there is something going on here. But we should be asking whether those actions warrant this stuff. Well, in this case, it did. And then the fourth thing here with this is we should always resolve to know the truth. We should always resolve to know the truth. That being in ignorance is not a good thing, but particularly when something like this comes up. And so God is giving an example of this to Abraham. He's not needing to find out for himself, but he wants Abraham to see, and he wants us to see that this is what's going on. I'm going to go down, and I'm going to check this out for myself. You know why? If God's going to go down and check this out for himself, because what comes next is not going to be pretty. It's not going to be pretty, and no one's going to be able to level a charge against God that he is unjust or capricious, because he's checked this out for himself, because it's not going to be pretty. Okay? Read on. Anybody, we're at a new spot now. Let's go to 19. Anybody feel like reading 19? We're 19. Anybody feel like new something different? Dwayne, your decision to read. I know you are. Read.
The two angels arrived at Sodom.
Now they're angels.
Okay. And Lot was sitting in the gate.
Sitting in the gate, by the way, just to let you know, to sit in the gate means that you are a respected citizen of the community. So sitting in the gate, basically you get to see who's coming in and sort of give a nod. Ah, hi, how you doing there? Eric, good to see you there. Absolutely. Dwight, good to see you there, Dwayne. Good to see you there, Neil. It's good that you're here. You notice I've not mentioned any women, by the way. Sorry, ladies. But I wouldn't do that because that wouldn't be something a good, respectable man would do as he sits in the gate. However, Rachel, who we'll meet in subsequent weeks, is blessed by, may you possess your enemy's gate. Woman gets that. That's pretty wild. But basically, the gate is how you go in and out. It's a place of power, respect, and authority. And so Lot's there, right there in the gate, sitting in the gate. I used to joke when I was in seminary that we were sitting in the gate debating fine points of the law while the world perishes eternally. I should be out there doing something, not sitting around here doing nothing. I need to get out there and do what God wants me to do. Sometimes that's kind of what we do. We kind of sit in theological navel gaze for a while when we should actually be doing something. Okay. Was it you hated that? I did a lot of it, unfortunately. Yes, I did. tend to have that proclivity. It happens to be one of my favorite sins, I guess, but you know, you're finding that out about me. Of course, you knew that about me, Becky. My reputation preceded me. But you should have told the call committee. Anyway, read.
When he saw
now aren't you a little concerned that you were the first one to want to read right away? Didn't that kind of, now you know what I meant when I said you might want to hold off on that, but I went ahead and let you do it anyway. That,
thank you so much.
Oh yeah. Just wanted you to feel warm and welcome, like you're one of the read on.
When he saw them, he got up to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground. My lords, he said, please turn aside to your servant's house. You can wash your feet and spend the night, and then go on your way early in the morning. No, they answered, we will spend the night in the square. But he insisted so strongly that they did go with him and entered his house. He prepared a meal for them, baking bread without yeast, and they ate.
Now, your NIV is letting us down a little bit here. It's not exactly what they prepared. What did they prepare?
Unleavened bread.
Other than that, a feast.
A feast.
The Hebrew there is feast, and that's the big important distinction there, that they prepared a feast that he says he's going to celebrate with these people that have come. And so he puts on the dog for them. Okay? Read on.
Before they had gone to bed, all the men from every part of the city of Sodom, both young and old, surrounded the house. They called to Lot, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us so that we can have sex with them."
Okay, now the I'm gonna tip you off to something. I'm gonna teach you why Jerry Seinfeld has been deceiving you and laughing at you because you don't know Hebrew and you didn't have to grow up in a Jewish home. How many of you have said the phrase yada yada yada? Yada yada yada. How many of you said the phrase yada 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 without having a clue as to what it means? Okay. In the ESV, it says what? Not to have sex, but it says what?
Meet them.
To know them. You might know them. You know, Adam knew his wife. Well, the word there is to have carnal knowledge, not just mental knowledge, and that is to have sex with. And the Hebrew word is yada. Of course, Elaine is saying in that episode, well, you know, we went back to the apartment and yada, yada, yada. And she's not covering up anything to anybody that speaks Hebrew. I mean, as I said, that's exactly what went on is yada, yada, yada. That's exactly what went on. So just to kind of let you know anytime. But people say a lot of things that mean stuff in foreign languages that we really shouldn't be saying because it means stuff. Like schmuck is another one. You really don't want to know what that means. We've already talked about it in chapter 17. It's the part you throw away. What were we talking about in 17? That's a circumcision, yeah. That's what that is. Don't say that in polite... I'm in church. I said it out loud. But, I mean, you just need to know stuff like this. So, for future reference. But nevertheless, the idea is... And again, people have tried to say, well, let's keep reading. You're doing a great job.
Lot went outside to meet them and shut the door behind him and said, "No, my friends, don't do this wicked thing. Look, I have two daughters who have never slept with a man. Let me bring them out to you, and you can do what you like with them. But don't do anything to these men, for they have come under the protection of my roof." "Get out of our way," they replied. And they said, "This fellow came here as an alien, and now he wants to play the judge. We'll treat you worse than them." They kept bringing pressure on Lot and moved forward to break down the door. But the men inside reached out and pulled Lot back into the house and shut the door. Then they struck the men who were at the door of the house, young and old, with blindness, so that they could not find the door. The two men said to Lot,
What's the ESV have? The last verse. Groping for the door. That they're so intent on what they're doing, even being supernaturally blinded is not going to stop them from their intent. Now, a couple things here. This is undoubtedly one of the more controversial discussions that has been taking place in the church for quite some time. That is the issue of homosexuality. It's, you know, how people have tried to work around what's going on here has just been painful to watch. This is about as clear and... unvarnished a tale about homosexual rape as you could possibly get. That is what's being talked about here. There's just no getting around it. That's what's going on here. This is a gang homosexual rape that's being attempted to be perpetrated. Some have suggested that, well, what the real sin of Sodom and Gomorrah was is they failed to show Middle Eastern hospitality. Well, again, first of all, as I pointed out, because I wanted everyone to hear that, what sort of Middle Eastern hospitality has already been shown to these two guys? A feast. This isn't about hospitality. Hospitality has already been shown to these two guys. There's nothing to do with that. Absolutely nothing. But again, there is this specious reporting to try to say that this is really okay, that this is really the offense against Middle Eastern hospitality. That's not true. Clearly, the text teaches that they were shown that hospitality. Secondly, if this isn't about some sexual activity that the men, young and old, in this thing, why is it, and I don't know why Lot would do such a thing, that he would offer his two daughters for what? Sexual gang rape. Am I shouting that in church? I should not be shouting such things in church. That's really, it's not a pleasant thing to be talking about. It's Wednesday night, though, so I guess we can get by with that on Wednesday night. But, I mean, that's what's going on. The Bible is unabashedly clear about this. There's no question in the story. Now, what happens is that, obviously, people's thoughts come into this and try to say, well, how can this be, or how can we understand this, or how can we justify this, or how can I justify that? Let me just be very clear about something. There's something pretty awful going on at Sodom and Gomorrah. And we're getting a fairly good picture of it, of the awful thing that's going on. Again, there's no ambiguity. There's no question about what's going on. It's clear. And God's agents, whether these two people are two parts of the Trinity or two angels or two just messengers, God's made it clear. He's pretty much checked this out for himself to make sure this is what's going on. There is no question in anyone's mind what's going on. So what happens next is not a function of God just being a spoil sport or God being this or God being that. God is being the judge of all the earth. God is acting in justice and judgment. That's scary. I don't say that with any kind of joy or whatever, but it's the case. And we need to understand that. In Galatians chapter 6, Paul writes, not just all these wonderful things about grace and faith. He said, God is not mocked. Pretty clear. And so we need to see what's going on here. So what comes next? Yes, yes.
So how much time do you think between the time where Lot separated from Abraham and this incident, like how much time do you think? Because there are...
Okay, probably about 20 years maybe. Because it takes place before... It takes place sometime, it's at least 14 years or 13 years. And let me tell you why, at least 13 years. Because Hagar hasn't entered the picture yet, okay? I mean, she might be around, but we haven't had that happen yet. Ishmael's 13 years old when he gets the clippity-clip, okay? And you know what gets left? That wonderful German word. And there's some time after this. So probably 15, it's the time before, because Isaac isn't born yet, okay? This takes place immediately following the announcement that in 1 year Isaac's going to be born. So this takes place in Ishmael's 13th year, or he's 13 years old. It takes place in his 14th year. So that's when it takes place. So it's at least 14 years and probably a little bit more between those two episodes.
So what do you kind of think, speculate what happened to Lot that he could go into this environment and then rise up to be a man of esteem in a place where he knows anybody coming through that gate is not safe?
That's a great question.
What is he thinking to try, you know, that is he so assimilated or so used to it that he just doesn't... You know, he only pays attention to it now. All of a sudden, there's some special people, and he bows before them, so there's something about them that's unusual.
You raise an incredibly valid point, that we can become so assimilated by our culture that we don't think twice about it. And that's a real danger we as followers of Jesus have, is that we can be so assimilated by the things in our culture that we think that that's normal and all right.
It's interesting how the people, the men at the door are so vehement about being judged. Yes. Who are you to judge us?
There you go again. Incredibly vehement about this. You can't judge. How dare you judge me? And how set on their way of destruction they are. Even in the blindness, they're groping to get a hold of that door. Pick a sin, though. As I said, we want to focus on this one because it's one we like to focus on. But we should just pick one, because the fact is, a sin could come in a lot of different forms. Okay?
So you promised that wasn't a plan?
No, I promised that wasn't a plan. My wife actually grew up at a Bible church. Eve... She thought you were a plant. If it was, it was a rose.
Well, I guess I've never really thought about it. When hearing it, you think of questions and just kind of observation.
Well, yeah. I mean, as I said, it makes an immense amount of sense. It does. It's not in my notes. You can look. It will be before night's end, but... But unfortunately, I will have to give credit to the SMC because there are way too many witnesses. And it's also on tape, too. So as I said, what am I going to say? But yeah, as I said, we become so culturally assimilated that somehow we've got to get shocked. Guess who else is culturally assimilated? Well, let's keep going. We'll see how cultural. Becky, you want to keep reading? You're doing a great job. Oh, you weren't. Oh,
somebody else was, but I can go back.
Dwayne was reading.
Yeah.
You have a question?
One more question.
No, stop. We'll ask questions till the cows come home. What was the question?
So, from this story, it's clear that homosexual rape was going on, and that sure. Was repulsive.
Yes.
But is it another sign of our cultural assimilation that, in fact, Ezekiel says that wasn't the primary sin?
Ah, you're reading my notes. Ezekiel 16, 48 and 50, right?
Yep, 49,
yep. Would you mind reading that? Because
now this was the sin of your sister Sodom. She and her daughters were arrogant and overfed and unconcerned. They did not help the poor and needy. They were haughty and did detestable things before me. Therefore, I did away with them, as you have seen.
There you go. It's pride. It's pride. It's saying, you can't tell me I'm a sinner. You can't tell me I'm wrong. How dare you judge me? How dare you? It's pride.
Isn't it what the world nowadays?
Pardon?
Isn't it what the world?
Oh, absolutely. That's why I say, when Jesus says it's going to be like Noah, it's going to be like Lot, all of a sudden, this is why I'm glad you're all here, because guess what? This is how we seek the truth. This is how we seek the truth. We'll get to this sheet in a little bit, but as I said, it is listed on there. But yes, that's absolutely the case. All right, read on. Verse 12. 1912. That was a great year. Arizona became a state.
Okay. The two men said to Lot, "Do you have anyone else here? Sons-in-law, sons or daughters, or anyone else in the city who belongs to you? Get them out of here, because we are going to destroy this place. The outcry to the Lord against its people is so great that he has sent us to destroy it." So Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law, who were pledged to marry his daughters. He said, "Hurry and get out of this place.
Up, get out.
The Lord is about to destroy the city." But his sons-in-law thought he was joking.
Again, culturally assimilated. Okay, to their own demise. They're actually given a get-out-of-jail-free card. Remember I talked about get-out-of-jail-free cards in the sermon the other day? Didn't I? I thought I did. Maybe I was, that was the dream I had. Okay. Every now and then I dream about
it. On the cutting room floor.
It was left on the cutting room floor. That happens too. In any case, these guys get out of jail free card. They get out of, you know, get out of fire and brimstone free card. And what do? They say, you're nuts. You're just kidding. You can't possibly think that way. You can't possibly be that backward. Read on.
With the coming of dawn, the angels urged Lot, saying, hurry, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, or you will be swept away when the city is punished. When he hesitated, the men grasped his hand and the hands of his wife and of his two daughters.
I like what it says, but when he lingered, look who is still wanting to be culturally assimilated, even though he knows, because he's walked with Abraham. I mean, you can't be in the presence of a man of God like Abraham without some of it rubbing off on you, without some of Abraham's special relationship with God being made aware to you. And here's a guy that's had that kind of closeness. You talk about degrees of Kevin Bacon, huh? You know, do you talk about degrees of Kevin Bacon? Do you know what I'm talking about? How many ever degrees of Kevin Bacon? I just have 350 degrees of bacon on my griddle, so absolutely. Okay, read on.
When he hesitated, the men grasped his hand and the hands of his wife and of his two daughters and led them safely out of the city, for the Lord was merciful to them. As soon as they had brought them out, one of them said, flee for your lives. Do not look back and do not stop anywhere in the plain. Flee to the mountains, or you will be swept away. But Lot said to them, no, my lords, please. Your servant has found favor in your eyes, and you have shown great kindness to me in sparing my life. But I can't flee to the mountains. This disaster will overtake me, and I'll die. Look, here is a town near enough to run to. And it is small. Let me flee to it. It is very small, isn't it? Then my life will be spared. He said to him, very well, I will grant this request too. I will not overthrow the town you speak of, but flee there quickly, because I cannot do anything until you reach it. That is why the town was called Zoar.
Zoar.
Which means little. Which, by the way, is kind of interesting, because he says, oh, let me go to Zoar. I'll like it there. That'll be fine. And guess what happens? Well, we'll find out what happens of his relationship with Zoar in a little bit. Let's stop here just for a quick second here. A couple things I want to teach you about. Number one, bad company may not ruin good morals, but it certainly can affect them. Notice that Lot calls the men of Sodom brothers, and that even that Lot would suggest giving his daughters to the crowd is reprehensible. Number two, it is often erroneously thought that Lot's wife was the only one who was reluctant to leave the city. Not so. Did you hear what Lot was kept? I mean, every excuse you can think of. You talk about heel dragging. He had to be drug out of there. Yes, sir.
In reference to the question she asked him, the Lord's rule would be sorry.
Yeah, right.
And in reference to the meeting where you talk about Lot was called reluctant to leave the city.
Mm-hmm.
Why was it caused? Was it because of the economic status of the city that was causing Lot? Because if you look at it from the beginning,
sure,
when they were separating,
yeah,
Lot looked up and saw,
sure,
and there was one side of this, one side that was green,
yeah,
and it was prosperous, and
sure,
everything seems to be good there.
Yeah.
So was it because of the economic status of the city,
mm-hmm,
that was preventing him from leaving from there, even though he knew that things that was going on in the city was not right?
Well, not only that, but here's the thing. He already was wealthy. There's something else there. It goes back to this issue of pride. You see, a wealthy person can be coerced by a larger group because they're not popular or they don't fit in or whatever. It's the need to fit in. It's the need for approval of the crowd instead of the approval of God. And that's really what Lot's downfall is here, is that he is looking for man's approval rather than God's approval. And that's really what his downfall is. Because he's got all the cash he needs. I mean, really, he does. I mean, because he probably lost a little bit of money by not being able. I mean, he knew how to make money out there It's tough to be a sheep herder in a city. I want to tell you something. They don't allow it. They have ordinances against such things. They do. They're not going to let you keep sheep in the suburbs, man. They don't cotton to that. Okay? All right. So those are a couple things. Let's keep going on, because we are almost going to actually make, I think we actually might make this. You will be amazed. You will say to yourself, you'll go home and tell your friends and spouses and everybody who's not here, say, he actually did it. He actually did it in an hour and a half. He's turned over a new leaf in the new year. Well, keep going. All right. No, you're fine. Just don't read slower.
By the time Lot reached Zoar, the sun had risen over the land. And the Lord rained down burning sulfur on Sodom and Gomorrah.
Sulfur and fire.
Out of the heavens. Thus he overthrew those cities and the entire plain, including all those living in the cities, and also the vegetation in the land. But Lot's wife looked back, and she became a pillar of salt.
Amen.
Early the next morning, Abraham got up and returned to the place where he had stood before the Lord. He looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah, toward all the land of the plain, and he saw dense smoke rising from the land, like smoke from a furnace.
Well, and this, of course, reminds us of what it says in Revelation about the destruction of the whore of Babylon, and the smoke goes up from her forever and ever. There is this sense of this is conspicuous of what's going on, and it's meant to be conspicuous. I mean, when they crucified Christ, the Romans intended it for to be conspicuous. That's what they did. They intended this to happen in such a way so that if you saw that, you realize, oh my goodness, this is meant to be conspicuous. Okay, keep going.
So when God destroyed the cities of the plain, he remembered Abraham, and he brought Lot out of the catastrophe that overthrew the cities where Lot had lived.
Okay, now, there are a couple, I have a list of, someday I'll get you the list. There's a list of 10 things that God remembers. This is one of them. God remembered Abraham. And God remembered Abraham on account of his nephew, because he would understand how Abraham would feel if his nephew were caught in this conflagration. It would be very disheartening to Abraham. So let's go over a couple of things. What are we to learn about this? First of all, what some people ask, well, what's so wicked about homosexuality? Because that's something that gets asked frequently in our society today. Certainly, the wickedness of the individuals that are involved here are very much the case. You already stole the thunder about the Ezekiel 16, but that's okay. Go to peace and serve the Lord. Also, I might add, there are other passages that speak about this. Not a great deal. We can talk about that briefly. You can ask questions, too, if you want. There is the Levitical Code. Twice in the Levitical Code, Leviticus 18, Leviticus 20, 13, both 18, 22, 20, 13, both say the same thing about homosexual activity as being an abomination to God. Now, people often will say, well, wait a minute, so is also wearing, let's see, no, I've got cotton pants on, and of course the sweater is all cotton. Sorry, such a doofus. The socks are not, however. They are a mingled stuff. And mingled stuffs are, of course, forbidden in the Levitical Code. Also, other things are forbidden in the Levitical Code. And so you say to yourself, well, wait a minute. How come you just selectively quote this and not that? Okay. It's an interesting point, but as... didn't someone ask me about why is it that some things in the Ten Commandments... Why do we obey the Ten Commandments and not the other things? Well, certain things are a part of what we call natural law, that they just sort of say, this is, you know, even nature teaches us that, which, by the way, is Paul's argument in Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1, verses 18 and following, talk about that nature teaches us that this just isn't how things work. This just isn't how things work. And then last but not least, one of the practices of the pagan culture that the Israelites inherited, again, you talk about cultural folks, was the practice of male cult prostitution. Remember what I told you about how the Canaanites made it rain? You have blank stares on your face. Don't you remember how I told you how the Canaanites made it rain? Here's how the Canaanites made it rain. You'd go down, it's not raining, you're a farmer, okay? You go down to the Canaanite temple, and there you would have a Canaanite prostitute. And you would shake the sheets with the Canaanite prostitute, pay her, of course, because she was a temple prostitute. She was connected to the religious cult. And you would shake the sheets with her. Baal, who was, of course, the bull god, who, of course, being a bull, but, you know what I'm talking about, would look over at Astarte, and Astarte, who is the female fertility god, who looks, you know, she's all that. I mean, she actually looks like a Rubenesque painting, if the truth be known. But the fact of the matter is that she's supposed to be exceedingly fertile-looking. And so they kind of look at each other and go, hey, honey, take a look down there. You see what's going on down there? They're shaking the sheets down at the temple. You got any ideas, honey? Uh-huh. Wink, wink, nod, nod. Know what I mean? And so all of a sudden, Baal and Astarte start shaking the sheets, and for some reason, it starts to rain, and everything's fertile. I'm not making this up. I am not making it. That is the truth. This is how it worked. Now, they also had male cult prostitutes, but they weren't for the females. They were for the folks that was their preference. Same sort of stuff. This was called an abomination, and this is when Israel speaks to this. Now, what's interesting is this, is the only time this subject comes up is when the people of God are entering into an area of, in the case of the Canaanites, pagan culture, in the case of the New Testament, Gentile culture. As the mission went forward in the Gentiles, they encountered what? They encountered the Greek culture, the Gentile culture, where homosexuality was accepted, particularly in the Greek culture. And so therefore, in 1 Thessalonians and in Romans, Paul speaks about this and talks about how this all works and that this is something that we don't do. Now, people will often say, well, Jesus never talked about it, which ostensibly is true. But Jesus didn't need to talk about it because he was in a Jewish culture where this practice was clearly forbidden. So there's no need for Jesus to have talked about it. But when the culture encounters, as I said, the pagan Canaanites, and the culture encounters the Gentile world where these practices were going on, something needed to be said about it. And so that's what happens. But the real point, I think, of this particular episode is this. It has to do with this acculturation. And it doesn't matter what it is. It really doesn't matter. You see, what happens is, as Christians, we get hung up on the one thing and forget about, I mean, I'm not saying that we shouldn't be clear about the one thing, be clear about it. But we get hung up on that and we forget that the real problem lies in being acculturated and not hearing the truth of God and sort of thinking, well, this must be all right. And that can go for any number of things in our lives. So, any thoughts or comments about number three? I feel real good. You know why? Because I really don't want to talk about number four, and we got 5 minutes to do it in. So that's good. Everybody should get ready to go. Let's practice. Ooh. Are y'all ready to go? Y'all ready to go home and take a shower after this? Because you're going to really feel like, this, does it really say that in the Bible? It does. Episode number four. Okay. Who feels like reading? Not after that. I'll read. Okay. Now, Lot went up out of Zoar and lived in the hills. This is the fourth episode now of Lot. Now, Lot went out to live in the hills with his two daughters, for he was afraid to live in Zoar. Hey, at first he thought Zoar was going to be the right place to be. Evidently, he's got some spiritual ambivalence going on in his world. And the firstborn said to the younger, our father is old, and there is not a man on earth to come into us after the manner of all the earth, meaning wink, wink, nod, nod, know what I mean. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him, and we may preserve offspring from our father. So they made their father drink wine that night. And the firstborn went in and lay with her father. Yes, that's what she did. And he did not know when she had laid down or when she arose. That is drunk, friends. That is drunk. Then the next day, The firstborn said to the younger, "Behold, last night I lay with my father. Let us make him drink tonight, wine tonight also, and you go in and lie with him, that you may preserve offspring from our father." So they made their father drink wine that night, and the younger arose and lay with him, so he did not know it when she lay down and when she arose. Thus both daughters of Lot became pregnant by their father. Are we about ready to say it on count of three? One, two, three. And the firstborn bore a son, called his name Moab. He is the father of the Moabites to this day. The younger bore a son and called his name Ben-Ammi, and he is the father of the Ammonites to this day. Now, you need to know something. The Moabites and the Ammonites are not friends of Israel, okay? They're not. The Moabites in particular were ones waiting there and said, "You think you're going to come in? Yeah? Oh, yeah. Yeah? Oh, yeah." They were waiting for this to happen. And the Ammonites were equally problematic for the Israelites. And so this might be just a little bit of a statement that says, "Yeah, you see where they come from? So's your old man." You know, kind of a conversation like that. So this is a rather unpleasant little story that we see. It's pretty disgusting. There's no two ways about it, but it's there. And probably the purpose of it being there has to do with this issue of this is kind of how society has unraveled. But furthermore, how this generational thing has unraveled from one degree to another. Whereas before you had a guy who was relatively godly, yet being exposed to the culture, these two daughters, what do they think? They think this is okay. This is how we do this. This is how to get this done. Well, you know, that's a pretty repugnant thing. I mean, I don't know how to get around it any other way. But what we see is we see this moral slide that happens here. And I think it's a good warning for us. As I said, tonight's not going to be a happy night. Tonight's going to be a night of judgment and warning. But it's a warning for us to see, you know, generationally, we have to watch out for that slide that takes place. And it starts with us. Because guess what? Guess who's watching us? The next generation is watching us. Our kids are watching us. And so they're taking a look and saying, I wonder how they things are behaving. So we just need to be very cognizant of that because it's pretty important. Tony Campolo, I don't know if you've heard of Tony Campolo or not. He was kind of popular about 20 years ago as a speaker and so forth. And he made the comment that we aren't giving our kids anything to rebel against. He said, remember Rebel Without a Cause, the movie Rebel Without a Cause? He says, that's our problem. Is that our job is to give our kids something to rebel against. We haven't given them anything to rebel against. They have no idea where we stand about anything. Isn't that the way? Do our kids really know where we stand? Yeah, it's the nature of kids to rebel, by the way. I got a feature for you. Don't feel guilty. Don't feel bad if your kids have rebelled. They do that. Guess what? You did too to your parents. They said, "No, I was a good girl." That's what you can come right out of your mouth. That was... No. You rebelled. You married me. That was your rebellion. Boy, isn't that sad? That's just so sad. You think about it. And it continues. Yes, it continues. Well, in any case, by the clock on the wall says, any questions? Pastor Lee.
I have something here. Because our friend Chip Tyler has been at Tel El Tamon. Do you know that place?
I know that he's been doing archaeological work.
They feel that in this place, where there's an archaeological dig, that they have found the true site of Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yes.
And so if you want to go online, it's like Tel El Hamam. It's TallelHamam.com. And you can read about the dig, but the things that they have found, one of them is just so interesting to say, well, did this really happen?
Yeah.
And they have found rock there that they can't find anywhere else on earth except in the desert of the United States where we had nuclear testing.
Yep.
That the heat in the sand did that and created that rock. And this is the only other place on earth that they've ever found.
Isn't that crazy? Now, the sheet that I gave you, that's very cool.
Yeah.
The sheet that I gave you gives you an idea of just how much this is talked about, both in the Old and the New Testament. I think it's important for us to see that this idea of God's judgment doesn't just stop in the Old Testament, but it's also in the New Testament as well. Who would like to pray us out of here? Somebody pray us out of here. I'll pray us out of here. Okay, if I have to, I guess. We pay you to pray, Pastor. Father in heaven, for Jesus' sake, send us out from tonight, knowing that you do care for us, that you do love us, and that there is grace that is available to us in your Son, Jesus Christ. Lord, also remind us, Lord, of the fearful thing it is to fall into the hands of a living God. Teach us to not mock you and to mock your justice and to your judgment. Teach us to preach the word, the gospel in its truth and purity, so that people might be spared from the awful, awful specter of the judgment that is to come. Lord, remind us that that's why you're waiting. You're waiting for us to preach the gospel, because it is not your desire that any person should perish. Your desire is that all should achieve salvation. But Lord, you have given us the task of proclaiming the gospel. Wake us from our lethargy and help us to be urgent about preaching your word and your Son, Jesus Christ, and the good news of salvation. For we ask this in Jesus' name, and we're bold to say, amen. Amen. Give them heaven. Go out and recruit some friends. Tell them how much fun you had here tonight. Go to the byways and the highways and compel them. Besides, it's warm in here. It's cold out there.